Good morning, everybody. Happy Bala with you, 720 WGN. Hey, Roger Badish.
Well, hi, Mr. Matt Bubala. I'm sitting in the dark, and I can't see on the video cameras.
You can't see me? Hi.
Patty, oh, there is something waving.
We switched about, I don't know, 5, 3, 2, 6 months ago to these, what are they?
TV lights?
LED lights in here.
Yeah, very
They are
bright.
Harsh as all get out and bright. And so Patty always brings in the lamps from the green room and gives it this awesome kind of Ishnala, I would guess, feel, quite honestly.
Sure.
Our good friends up at Ishnala, who we want to visit someday soon.
All right. When are you taking me?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Still got to work that out.
Okay.
But I love it.
Yeah.
And yeah, Jess, you get to come too, of course. Absolutely. unfortunately, we got to work. You know, they close at 10, so we got to figure out how we're working this out.
My God, that's a
I don't know if we need a special permit.
There.
It's a long drive.
Well, it's up in... It's way north in Wisconsin.
No, it's not that far, is it?
Yeah, just it's look by up, the Dells, isn't up, it?
Well, that's not far at all.
I've never been to the Dells.
What?
Well, yeah, no. I've
You've never been to the Dells?
I've got it's Lake like Michigan.
Jess hasn't been there either. Oh, my God. It's like we need a whole Brady Bunch Goes to Kings Island episode.
Okay, all right. All right, we'll go.
I can't believe you haven't been to the Dells.
No, never.
Raj.
I don't even think
Jess,
my wife's been.
People.
My kids haven't been.
What are you, anti-Wisconsin altogether?
No, not at all. Love Wisconsin.
Nah, it doesn't sound
there's
like
this,
it.
Oh, there's this great farm up there. Green Meadows Farm. We go up there to pick pumpkins. The kids love it.
It's go to marvelous. Wisconsin to pick pumpkins?
Yeah.
You know, we got farms that do that right here.
Yeah, and I got a lake right here I can
good
go
old
to
Illinois, too. Raj. Yeah, we need your we need your pumpkin tax money, you know. Yeah, don't be taking that up north of the Cheddar Curtain.
Yeah, I'm going to. We're so some Monday... We'll drive up
some there. Monday. Yeah, like it'll that. Be all right.
Let's all drive up. Let's do a family thing. Let's all go up there. And then we'll hang out at Ishnala and we'll close the place at 2 in the morning.
Well, but they close at 10.
Well, that's when they leave.
That's true. We could just stay.
Yeah.
If we promise to clean up, you think they'll let us just hang out?
Sure.
I like it.
We'll make sure we close the door firmly. Yeah.
Right, Jess says 2 hours and 55 minutes from here. That is not. That's like not, that's like a little bit more than it takes me to get home. That's fine. The Dells are awesome, Raj. We could go. You can go on the ducks, which I've never been on.
I've been on a duck.
In the Dells?
Nope. My dad was in charge of the civil defense for Evanston, and they had a duck, and we would. It was a military. Well, it looks just like the same as it did back in World War II, but we would take it down Central Avenue in Evanston during the 4th of July parade and then just keep going right to Lake Michigan.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Well, we've got to go do that.
Okay.
There's a great little downtown area we can walk around.
Okay.
There's that, what is it, Tommy Bartlett?
Yeah, Tommy Bartlett Water
Show. Got to go see the show. Yeah. There's lots of stuff we can do. And we'll go to Ishnala.
They stack the people up like 4 or 5 people high on the skis.
See, I've never seen the show. I've been up there for baseball tournaments a bunch and like just to take the kids to the water park. We go to the,
there's
a million
up there.
There's a ton. There's like 6 or 7 at least or more. But we usually go to Great Wolf Lodge.
Oh, okay.
Which is right off the expressway, and they've got is it the hurricane or the tornado? I don't know. They got some big thing that makes me sick when I go on it, so I don't go on very often. By the way, did you guys see the video this week of the Ohio Fair and that ride breaking apart?
I didn't see the video. I saw the story. I didn't need to see the video.
So it's a ride called the Fireball.
Yeah.
And it's like, I believe, if I have this right, it was 6 separate little segments. So it looks like almost like a claw machine. Okay, you've got all the little claws.
Yeah.
But at the bottom of each little piece of claw, there's like a 6-person, I think-ish, little, you know, seat, like a row of seats that you're tied into. So you got 6 rows of people sort of facing each other in a octagon shape. I know that would be 8, but I think it was only 6. And then, so it swings back and forth like a pendulum. And as it goes back and forth like a pendulum, it's also spinning.
Okay.
So it's a simple ride. You're swinging back and forth. It's spinning. Probably makes you dizzy, sick, whatever. On one of the ways back down, I don't know the full story yet, if something hit or what happened, it breaks apart.
Oh, no.
And people go flying. 1 person was killed. 7 were injured. some critically, you know, really bad. And so the Ohio State Fair shut down all their rides. Places across the country have shut
Illinois
down the Fireball
shut down
ride.
At the State Fair, yeah.
All the rides are just the Fireball?
The rides associated with the manufacturer.
It was scary as all get out. And and we had just been talking at home about rides like that, and that, mm-hmm. and I just don't like letting the kids.
Oh, I've seen this ride. I'm watching the video now. I've seen this before. I've seen this ride before, yeah. I know what it's like. It flips back and forth, and it's a wheel. You call it the claw. There are arms from the wheel, and it spins around, but then the entire thing's on a pendulum.
Yeah.
And it flips back and forth. So, yeah,
it just goes back and forth. Yeah. And so that one broke apart. And, you know, and I don't want to disparage carnivals like this. Mm-hmm. There's always little carnivals and little towns all over the place that you pass. Mm-hmm. We have a nice fair at the end of summer in West Dundee that has rides like this. Mm-hmm. And I always get very nervous about the kids going on them because anytime that it's, and I get nervous at Great America and things like that. You always see a story once a year about people getting caught on a ride or people stuck or what happened in Kansas
roller
City
coaster,
last year at the water park.
That's right. They flew off.
The Verrucan. The poor boy was decapitated on that ride. So there's all sorts of things you hear about that make you scared.
There's danger inherent in anything that defies gravity or the laws of nature.
That's true.
Seriously.
No,
I mean, people weren't meant to be spun around like that. Here's a guy who used to love spinning around at speeds that would flatten him against the edge of a river.
Yeah.
You know? But still, and now I can't go on those rides because of an inner ear issue that I've had since about 20.
Raj, I can't go high on the swings anymore.
Yeah.
Honest to God.
Yeah.
My stomach hurts if I start swinging too high.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never, I was never a person who was going to get on any of those rides because I was always scared.
As a kid, I used to love it.
Yeah,
I loved those rides. But now,
Yeah, I never did. So seeing that this week just freaked me out.
Yeah.
And it's terrible, but it's good to be able to tell the kids this is why you are not allowed to go on this.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just don't want to deal with that. And I know Anna loves, you know what we did this week?
What?
So the triplets had their 12th birthday.
Triplets
are 12 years old.
Look at that. My God, it seems like only yesterday.
So a month ago, I get a 16-year-old. I took him to get his license last week. So now he's legally driving. Jack is legally driving.
Wow.
And the triplets are officially 12 years
Good
old.
Lord.
Oh, tell me about it.
You're getting so old.
Shut up. You're darn right I am. So we're trying to think, what are we going to do for their birthday? Because like it's this time of year. Every year, the triplets have spent, basically since they were five, involved in baseball in some way.
Yeah.
Because Jack's all-star teams are always still playing. The boys are on the all-star team this year. They're still playing. So every year, it's you know, and Anna does not like to do the same things as the boys. We generally will go to a Cubs game or something, but Anna kind of gets dragged into that. So this year, it turned for, all right, what are we going to do different? What do you get? Because they had baseball at night. What can we do during the day? So we took them to the iFly in Rosemont.
These
are these indoor skydiving places.
Yeah.
Jess, have you done this yet? You have to talk on the air so everybody can hear.
I heard her.
You did?
Well,
it like sounded like it was
faintly,
just in my ear.
Yeah, it was.
I have not been, but I've always wanted to. I do have tickets to go. I got tickets for Christmas. So.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
To where?
iFly.
In Rosemont?
Yeah, but you have to go through a whole tutorial.
It takes 5 minutes, literally. We did that too. So we signed up for a family pack. Colleen did not want to do it. And so I'm like, I'll do it. But I'm thinking, okay, I'll do this. But it's not roller coaster ride. I'm thinking, well, this can't be that scary, right? You're just floating in the air. I didn't know. I really didn't know going in. So Colleen's like, no way I'm doing it. And I'm thinking, oh, what does she know that I don't know? That's troubling. And Anna's like a complete daredevil. So she's if I would have said we're jumping out of a plane today, Anna would have been in. And Tommy was very hesitant about this whole thing. Because we went a year or two ago, we went to visit friends down in Texas, and we went ziplining at just outside of Austin over this huge lake. And it was these huge zip lines where you're like 150 feet up in the air and going 2,000 feet across a wire.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of scary. And Tommy got really nervous doing that. So he was hesitant about this whole thing. But you go to iFly. It's not cheap. And you don't get a lot for it.
Yeah.
Like you only fly. So our package, our family package of five. Cost, I'll tell you, $300.
Woof.
So it's not cheap. And for that, all you get is you fly twice for a minute each time.
That's it?
Yes, that's it. It goes quick. but it is so cool
that
you would totally do it. And so it's just this huge, basically vacuum tube.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy in there. He's trained. So you go through a little training session first. You watch a video on how to best fly. So once you get in there and you get in the air,
mm-hmm.
they basically want you to, you know what the position is? If you've flown at all in the last couple of years and you go through, instead of the regular old security, you go through the big body x-ray where the thing whoosh, whoosh by you.
Oh, right.
So you got to walk in. They say hands above your head.
And then
and instead of putting your hands up like you're being robbed, you kind of bend your elbows so your hands are above your actual head. So you're kind of crooked there. That's basically it. You put your hands like that. And then you have your legs either straight or bent. They will tell you. They get little hand signals they teach you because you cannot hear a thing once you go in there.
Wow. Well, it's loud. A lot of air.
Oh, well, yeah. So basically, it's a huge tube, and you're about halfway up the tube. And you walk into this little tube, and it's just like a fence. A graded fence is the floor.
Uh-huh.
And as you walk in, you just kind of jump in, sort of like you're jumping into a pool.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy helps hold you, and then you start floating.
Wow.
And if you're good at holding your body still in the right way,
mm-hmm.
he can kind of let you go. For some of our kids, like Tommy did a really good, as scared as he was, he did a really good job of just holding still. Michael and Jack were kind of flailing. And if you flail, then the air is not going to grab you and hold you up.
Right.
And like the heavier you are, the more they turn up the air. Like they had to crank up the air a bit for me and turn it down for Anna, or else she would have, you know, shot into the ceiling, I guess. And it goes up about a good 30, 40 feet from where you are. And if you look down below the grade, I think it's about 30, 40 feet down. And so there's this huge, huge fan thing at the bottom that's shooting air up and a thing catching it at the top and recirculating it, I guess.
Wow.
And so we all went in there and the guy kind of holds you and helps you out and you float around. And it was really, really cool. I mean, really cool.
Were you like, when I get excited about cool things, I just start laughing hysterically.
I did. I smiled a lot.
Okay.
But here's the thing they don't tell you in the video, which I was stunned by.
What?
It's hard to breathe once you go in there because the air is shooting at you so hard that you kind of like, one of the kids said they breathe through their nose. I found that I couldn't breathe through my nose and it was hard to like figure out how to, you know, like just start breathing air in because it's shooting at you so hard that it is like blowing your cheeks back, you know, like one of those zero gravity
G
things.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's kind of hard to like, all right, I got to breathe in. I got to breathe in. And the guy's giving me signals. I couldn't for the life of me remember what the signals meant.
After the tutorial.
Yeah, I'd just done this. I'm like, what does that mean? Finally, I figured out he's giving me a two, which means straighten your legs out. And then once I did that, you catch more air and it was holding me up. So on your second time through, you could decide whether to do this sort of grand finale. And because we had birthdays, we got the grand finale for free.
Ooh.
And Tommy did not want to do the grand finale. Jack did it, Anna did it, and I did it. And basically the grand finale, like in your last 20 seconds, the guy goes up in the air with you, and you start spinning around, and you go way high up.
Really?
And then come back down. And it's really cool.
Do they, like, turn the fan up a little extra?
He had to have, because now there's two of us, and the guy's an adult.
Wow.
So then we finish, we all get out, and then the guy's like, all right, I'm going to put on a little show for you. He goes back in by himself.
Oh.
And starts flying around, literally like Superman. It's crazy what they can do.
Does he do flips and stuff?
They're doing flips. Yeah. They're flying upside down. They're spinning around in circles upside down. He shot up to the ceiling and like clung to the ceiling for a few minutes. And then he like did a nosedive down like his head was going to go through that grated floor.
Yeah.
And then like turned his body and went back up like before he hit. It was crazy, but really cool. And so if you keep going back, you can progress and like sort of they'll teach you how to do tricks and stuff. So if you put in enough time and hours at great expense, you can go in there and do all that cool stuff.
Wow.
It's really awesome. And if anybody was ever going to think about going skydiving, I would totally do that a bunch of times first just to get used to the feeling and the idea of it.
Because I know if you've never been skydiving, you go to want to do it. You go through several days of training. It's not like your first day there you go.
That would make sense.
You know, and then you always go attached, tethered to someone else.
Yeah.
Now, if you want an experience, I know we're late for news again, but...
Yeah, what happened there?
It's cool. Don't worry about it. So, I found out that this past weekend, our daughter decided to go kayaking or rafting. Rafting out, okay. I forgot where exactly. But she went with her two daughters. And it was supposed to be a beginner's, you can tell where this is going, a beginner's course and river. And it wasn't. They hit a patch so rough that both of the girls, they all had life jackets on, both of the girls and our daughter got flipped out of the boat. People in the boat behind them got flipped out.
Oh, jeez.
Our daughter was, like, frantic. Our oldest granddaughter was okay. She was floating okay. But the youngest granddaughter was underwater for at least 30 seconds. and our daughter couldn't find her.
Oh, my God.
Until she finally popped up and near some rocks.
Oh.
It was very scary.
You weren't there, right?
No, I heard about this afterwards, like way afterwards, like days afterwards.
Your poor daughter must have just been like, and I just can't even imagine.
She smacked her foot on a rock or something, and her toes have swollen up. She's got a big bruise. The girls, thank God, are okay. And the other people in the other boat were okay, I guess. She didn't say that anyone wasn't found, but still, this was a beginner's rafting class.
So did they explain what happened? Was it just, bad current, or?
She never explained it. She never, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
You know, and they didn't have shoes on. They lost their shoes. Her phone is obviously, you know, first world problems.
At that point,
the phone, yeah, right,
who
gone.
Who cares what you lost?
But then she
alive,
couldn't
right?
contact us. Man. That was the other thing. So she was incommunicado, you know, and had to walk on along the shore, and it was not like a barefoot walking area, you know. That's as much as I know, and I didn't dwell on it because.
You're just getting angrier by the moment, I
yeah,
imagine.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very frightening. And
that is scary.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad everybody's okay.
Yeah, it's everyone's fine. The girls are fine. The youngest is she's okay.
I was going to say, did the youngest pop up out of the water and go, wow, that was awesome!
No, she was scared. I asked her, I said, were you scared? And she says, yeah. And then I asked our daughter, I says, was she okay? And our daughter said, oh, yeah, she was fine. When she popped up, she was laughing. I go,
yeah.
And
aren't kids amazing?
But she wasn't laughing. She was scared.
Well, but maybe she laughed when she first popped up and then suddenly saw her mom's face, who was ghost white and ready to die.
Oh, yeah.
And then realized.
It was horrible.
You know?
Well, she was looking under the water. She couldn't see her.
Oh, Raj. Okay, so let me see. What am I checking off? We're not riding the fireball at the fair.
Yeah.
Not going whitewater rafting this summer.
Right.
Two things off the list.
There
okay.
you go. Yeah.
2:40 in the morning, keeping with tradition. Now it's time for the headlines. Here's Roger Badish. Thank you, Jess. I'm wearing my Led Zeppelin shirt tonight, so that's very appropriate. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is our number if you want to jump in and say anything at any time. We're happy to, if you have your own story of something that went terribly awry that freaked you out, like Roger had with his grandchildren. I also want to talk a little later in the show. Maybe we'll try to get to this tonight. If not, we'll get to it next week, because now I'm starting to run out of time already. Because next hour, Twin Peaks hour, bear with me, people.
Okay.
It's so good.
I know.
And then 4 o'clock, I don't know how I'm going to avoid talking about the mooch.
The mooch.
But there was a story last week that we never got to about that was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about tourists in Mexico and whether or not sometimes people are either being served tainted alcohol or purposely being drugged.
Yeah.
And it was a scary story. And so I want to get into that a little bit and at some point ask people if they've had any similar experiences where they went somewhere, had a couple of drinks and did not feel good and thought that was not because I drank too much. Something weird happened there. Mm. It's a very interesting story. So lots to talk about with that. Also, I have to mention, because I'll get yelled at by grandparents if I don't. Not my kids' grandparents, but my baseball player's grandparents.
Oh.
A lot of the baseball grandparents listen to the show, Raj.
That's great.
Yes. They're night owls. They're young children who have these grandchildren of theirs can hack it and stay up late with us.
Yeah.
But the grandparents are all up. I don't know if they're out partying, dancing, what they're doing, but they're living it up. I need to mention, so our little 11-year-old state, our little 11-year-old all-star team that I manage has made it to the state tournament.
Ooh, you did.
We did.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. It's going on in Streamwood this week.
Okay.
And we start at 11 a.m. this morning. I have to be at the manager's meeting at 8, so let's give me a rough morning for Matt. But I have to give a shout-out to all the boys who have worked so hard, and especially because his grandparents told me I better mention him, little Caden Wagonar, who Caden is, I don't know how tall Caden is, but he's about 5 foot nothing and looks like he weighs about 60 pounds soaking wet.
Soaking wet, right.
And he is pitching so well for us.
Really?
It is
the pitcher?
Ridiculous. He has pitched in 2 games and has just been insanely good.
How's his curveball?
He has made kids bail out of the box and gotten called strikes because he throws a curveball that looks like it's going to hit you and then bends right over the plate.
Oh,
it's
my God.
Insane. It's insane. He has it down. And he's a little guy, but he throws hard, too. And
is he throwing the 90s?
It's close. What's really important at this age, the interesting thing, Roger, about Little League baseball or young kid baseball is you start out at the age of 6 or 7 playing baseball, and the field never changes until you get, for Little League at least, until you get to 13. Even up to when you're 12 years old, it's still the mound is 46 feet away, and the bases are only 60 feet away. And so for these last few years, you know, some kids are already getting big and like, you know, we've got kids that are not that I'm tall. I'm not. But there's kids almost as tall as me on this team.
Sure.
And if you watch the Little League World Series this year, there's going to be 13-year-olds who are 6 foot tall or taller.
Yeah.
Because kids hit puberty early. They get huge. The baseball field does not grow. It's still small.
Right.
So if these kids hit the ball, it's going to go. And our team has hit. Like in our, we've played through district and what's called sub-state. We have played 9 games now. We're 8-1.
Wow.
I think we've hit 10 to 15 home runs because these kids are big and they swing. And when it goes, it goes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We kind of live and die.
Doesn't
by
take
run.
Long to get out of the park.
It does not. Yeah. And they're hitting 250-foot home runs, some of them. Mm. I mean, they're really killing the baseball. And so if, as a pitcher, we got to throw it low and at the knees and inside and outside and move it around and not give him that ball up at the letters and at the belt.
Yeah.
And Caden has mastered throwing strikes at the knees on the outside corner and throwing this curveball that makes him think it's going to hit him. And he has just been lights out for us. So,
that's fantastic.
So kudos to him and all the boys who are working so hard to make things.
And all the parents and grandparents who support him.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they do. So it'll be going on this week in Streamwood. And our 10-year-old team. So our 11-year-olds that I manage are in the tournament in Streamwood. Our 10-year-old team has made the state tournament as well. That is down in Salem, Illinois this week, about 4.5 hours away.
Wow.
So they're down in a hotel tonight. They also play at noon tomorrow, I think, or 11 a.m. tomorrow like we do.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll kick it off as well. So
that's fantastic.
Very exciting Little League time of year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we're excited for the boys. It's been a lot of work for them. So they've done a very good job, made everybody proud. Robert has a comment about Mexico. I want to get to that after we catch up on break. Matt Bubala here, WGN Radio. Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720, WGN. After the 3 o'clock news, Brad Dukes is the author of Twin Peaks in Oral History. He's going to be with us live up at the Twin Peaks Festival in the Pacific Northwest. He'll check in from there, see what cast members are out there and what they are doing. How are they celebrating Twin Peaks and all its glory this year? Texter from the 331 says, 11-year-olds should not be throwing curveballs. Now, that's interesting. Little League did a huge study on this just a few years ago. And they found an extensive study that found that it is not curveballs that are hurting kids' arms. It's overusage because kids are not only playing Little League, they're playing travel, they're playing year-round baseball. They're using their arms too much. Their study found that it's not the curveballs that are hurting them. It's pitching way, 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 way too much.
Mm. Interesting.
So, there you go.
Makes sense.
Not that a curveball can't hurt your arm. I'm sure it can.
But also trying to throw faster than your arm can throw.
And just throwing
a fastball.
Throwing too often is a big issue. Yeah. Robert, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I know you're going to talk about Mexico. I've owned property in Mexico for 30 years.
Okay.
And I go there all the time. And I was thinking about this while I was on hold. The United States of America, our water that we drink is not as pure and it's filtered as it was 30 years ago. We all know that because now our government makes us go and buy bottled water. So in Mexico, it's always been known you don't drink the water. And why people get sick is because they go out to a bar or to a restaurant and they have a cocktail with ice cubes.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, Robert, you haven't read the story that came out this week, right?
No, but I do know that you only, and I've known this ever since, I'm 58 years old. The first time I went to Mexico, I was 18. Mm-hmm. I do know that you only go to reputable restaurants and bars. You don't go to little local places that you can get a cheap drink.
Yeah.
Because you never know.
Sure.
I mean, I hate to say it, but if you look at a six-pack of Corona back 20 years ago, no bottle was equal. In other words, each bottle had a different amount in it. So there's all kinds of things that they don't have the kind of laws we do.
Well, let me say this, Robert. I don't know if you're on Facebook, but I'll put up, we have a Matt Bubala Show Facebook page. If you're on Facebook, give it a like. I'll put a link to the story up there from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And this story itself was not about people going into Mexico itself. It's people at all-inclusive resorts, high-end all-inclusive resorts, the kind I've been to and other people have been to. And so it was about whether or not, because they were getting sick. And when I go to the resorts, and I go to these resorts every year, we drink bottled water that they have there, and we've never had any issue with that. This is more about people thinking that they were drugged or served tainted alcohol. So there are questions about whether or not some of the alcohol is not being regulated as well as it should, and whether or not they're buying the right alcohol, maybe at some of these resorts, maybe saving a dollar or two that way, or whether people are purposely serving them, you know, different drinks. And there's a lot of theories, I think, on why this could be happening. Because the story to me doesn't have an end of here's why this is happening. Because we're drugging them to rob them or because they're being assaulted or anything. It was kind of like, all right, maybe this is happening, but why is this happening? I need to figure out a reason. So if we don't get to that tonight, we will in the coming weeks. Robert, thank you so much for calling in. Let's take a quick break and get to the news next on 720 WGN. Our friend Brad Dukes is the author of Twin Peaks and Oral History. He is right now somewhere in the Pacific Northwest at the Twin Peaks Festival. I don't even know where it's at. We got to figure that out. But the David Lynch reboot of the show that was a huge hit for ABC for a very short amount of time. It was a comet passing in the night. It lasted really popularly for about 10 episodes and then faded into obscurity over its next 12 and then was quickly canceled. But it had a life that went on forever. Now, 25 years later, the show is back on Showtime. And I'll know what Lynch is basically calling a movie in 18 parts. It's really set up more as a movie, not as a story week by week. And it has been incredible. It has been enjoyable. It has been quirky. It has been confounding and unexplainable. You got to go along for the ride. But even if you didn't watch the original series, you can, if you're willing to go along with it, and you got to be a little willing to go along with things here. If you want everything to make sense every moment, you're going to be very frustrated. But it is a ride and it is a joy. And there's a festival of crazy people in the Pacific Northwest celebrating Twin Peaks right now. And we'll chat with the author after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Heard the tone, 3 a.m. Here's the news. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio in the historic Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile. Michigan Avenue, it's a beautiful night out tonight. Gorgeous weather, a little breeze, a lot of people walking around outside. Twin Peaks kind of night, actually. Brad Dukes is the author of Twin Peaks and Oral History. He joins us on the phone right now, live from the Twin Peaks Festival. Hey, Brad, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Where is the Twin Peaks Festival?
It is in Snoqualmie, Washington, about 30 miles east of Seattle.
Snoqualmie, now I'm trying to remember my Twin Peaks history. Is that the location where something was shot there, or they've shot a lot of scenes there in the original series, right?
It's actually, I mean, for the first episode, that pilot, they came up here for about, I guess, 5 or 6 weeks. And then after that first episode, they moved everything to L.A., and everything was built on a set. So, but yeah, it all started up here.
So it was just one episode that was really, truly shot up there, and then everything else went to L.A. for the most part?
Yeah. And then they came back up here for Fire Walk With Me. But yeah, it's interesting. This thing, it's all... Most of it was done in California.
And what about for the new series? Was a decent amount shot up there, or was it all shot in L.A.?
Gosh, I think, as the legend goes, they filmed up here for about 5 or 6 weeks, and then they were in Los Angeles for quite a while. I guess we can talk about it now, South Dakota and Las Vegas, places like that.
Wow. So how many? So it's very interesting because this festival has gone on. Has it gone on every year since 1992? Since the prequel movie came out, Fire Walk With Me.
Yeah, that's correct.
So it must be fascinating. And I don't know how many times you've been, but I remember the festival, and I never attended, but I always thought that someday I'd like to go to it. And 3 years ago, the festival was probably, I would think, you know, waning a little bit. And then they announced they're going to make more. And now there must be insane interest in this thing, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, as a fan that was sort of watching things, I remember once the show got to Netflix is when I saw like people coming back to it. Mm. And that was really the turning point.
Do you know how many people are in attendance this year at the festival?
Yeah, there are 300 attendees.
So that's, and yeah. I imagine that's an uptick over, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, I started coming to this in 2008 and there were about 80 people. So it's definitely changed quite a bit over the years.
How many times have you been to the festival?
I think this makes 9.
Oh my God, you've really been good about going to it. Okay. And
yeah.
And so what celebrities from the show did they get to come out to it this year?
Let's see, Sherilyn Fenn is up here, and Charlotte Stewart, Kimmy Robertson, and some of the new guys. Krista Bell was here tonight. I talked to her, so that was really cool. And yeah, I think they actually have 15 of the actors up here. So it's
wow.
Been a very crazy experience.
Yeah, that's really incredible. Now, how long does the festival run?
It started today, and then we will run through Sunday.
And will it be panel discussions about the show, about shooting the shows, about the movie, about David Lynch in general? What type of things go on at the fest?
Oh, yeah. So tonight we had this banquet dinner and a panel with the cast and crew, and then there was a costume contest, which was really crazy. This guy dressed up like the Woodsman from Part 8 and Twin Peaks, and
cool.
He won. It was awesome. And then tomorrow, I'm actually taking some people on a bus tour, and then I think we're screening Wild at Heart tomorrow.
Oh,
so
very
it's
cool.
All kinds of fun stuff.
Any chance that has David Lynch ever appeared at the fest?
No, I don't think so, but he usually will send a message through an actor. You know, it might just be a quick poem or something, but it's always interesting to know that he knows we're up here celebrating.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. All right. So let's get into the movie a little bit, because you and I have not talked since right before it premiered, a couple of weeks before it premiered. You were on the show with us. And we talked about what to expect and what we're hoping for. I'd gone through the IMDb list with you of who's going to be in, who's not going to be in, what we knew at the time. You had said, you know, don't go exactly by what you see on IMDb because, you know, that might not all be completely accurate. Although it seems like it's turned out so far to be relatively accurate, wouldn't you say?
I would say so, yeah, absolutely.
We still have not. We're 11 hours into 18. And it's my buddy Jim and I, who I work with, who are were just huge Peaks fans since college when we got turned on to it. We are so sad that we're already 11 hours through this thing because it's been so damn good. It's ridiculous. And to think we only got 7 hours left, A, to wrap up what they've started, but also that it's going to end, it just crushes us because it's really been so enjoyable. And, you know, it's funny, Brad, last time we talked, I think I might have said, I don't remember, but I know I was thinking at the time, if you haven't watched Twin Peaks, I know, because you and I talked about, you know, here's your crash course. You got to watch the first 10 hours. After that, you can skip pretty much to the end if you want to get caught up. Because I thought that, you know, if you haven't watched it, Lynch is not going to be the kind of person who takes care of you and really brings you up to speed. But I think they've done a surprisingly good job. If you had never watched the original series, you can start watching this. They give you enough background on what had happened in the past that I believe you can jump in without ever having watched the original series.
Yeah, I mean, as crazy as it is, I think if you are just told one thing coming into it, you know, this guy has his evil twin is out, you know, causing trouble 25 years later. Yeah. I guess you could, but I mean, it's such a grueling, you know, offering so far because it's just this big puzzle and I don't think anybody really knows how it fits together except David Lynch. But I mean, I talk to people on my podcast every week and people will message me and it's like everybody looks at this differently. And I mean, it's really a testament to how special it is when it can generate that amount of different reactions.
Yeah. I imagine you've just been intensely pleased with it so far.
Yeah, I really love every part. I mean, for different reasons. I mean, it's just strange. It's like you'll have a favorite character pop up in one episode and then you won't see them again for like, you know, 8 weeks. So. Yeah.
Well, going back to the original series, James Hurley, who was an integral part of the first series, appeared in one episode. I don't know if it was the first or second or third episode, but very early on, he appeared flittingly for like 3 seconds, and we haven't seen him again. And Big Ed Hurley has still never been on the screen yet. He finally got mentioned last week, but he still hasn't appeared. And so, which is fine. I honestly, the first time I saw Nadine, I thought, I hope this is the only time I see Nadine. Cause there's not that I don't like the character or the actress or anything. It just, there's too much going on. We can't waste time with these little stories. And so, you know, sometimes I'll see a character. I'm like, okay, that's nice, but now let's move on. Cause I need something, you know, to go along with things. And, so it's very tough to figure out, is he just kind of giving a nod to the past and I'll show these people, or is this all going to somehow tie together in the end? Do you think, we've been debating this every week as we watch the show, wondering whether there are going to be a lot of loose ends that just never get solved, or if there are a lot of things also that are just, that's a Lynchian non sequitur and that doesn't matter to everything. It's just a weird little thing. Don't over worry about it. How much do you think everything will tie up when this series ends?
Gosh, that is something I've thought about for so long, because if you think back to the original ending of Twin Peaks, Dale Cooper looking at Bob in the mirror, I mean, they've got to have something up their sleeves to try to top that, or else why even bother making more Twin Peaks? So, I mean, I think we're going to get some kind of resolution about Dale Cooper, but everything else seems secondary to me. So I could see a lot of this stuff up in the air, but I really do want some sense of closure with this character of Agent Cooper that some people have lived with for 25 years.
Yeah.
So I think as long as I have that at the end of the day, I'll be pretty happy.
My prediction is that Dale will be dead at the end of the series.
Oh man, gosh, I hope not. It's pretty grim.
It is grim, but I don't think it will necessarily be grim, because it doesn't have to be grim, right? I mean, it can be a happy thing as well, sort of a freeing of a spirit type thing. And I think that that could be the case, that he's, you know, he lives on in the White Lodge or things like that. I don't think it's necessarily a gruesome he's dead, but more of a his spirit is now free type thing. What stood out to you most so far over these 11 hours?
What surprises me most?
Or has just stood out, like, I don't know. Like, what's, if somebody's just going to say, what do you think so far? What's the first thing you start talking about?
I always point back to that scene in Part 3 where you've got Evil Cooper wrecking this car and holding down all this vomit, and then you've got Bill Cooper climbing out of this purple world through a an electrical outlet, and then you've got this Dougie guy disappearing into the Black Lodge. So that has far and away been just my favorite crazy scene.
Anybody listening right now who has not watched this show is just going, what the hell is this guy talking about?
But I had a friend who watched the old Twin Peaks, but they didn't want to invest the time and check out a new season. And they were like, can you just tell me what happened so far? And I tried. And like 5 minutes later, I was like, did I make any sense at all?
Let's try to give the quick synopsis if we can so far. And if you think you're going to jump into it and don't want to know, that's fine. Tune away for a second or two. But basically, when Twin Peaks, the series, ended, Dale Cooper, who had come to Twin Peaks as an FBI agent to investigate the death of Laura Palmer, and it related to another murder outside of the county, so that's why the FBI got involved. There was this evil spirit that had possessed somebody on the show who killed Laura. And the way the show ends is the evil spirit gets inside Agent Dale Cooper. And that's how the series actually ends, is us seeing that the evil spirit is now inside Dale. We pick up 25 years later, which was prophesied in the show, because in one of these dream sequences Dale had, where he was in this room that we call the Black Lodge, Laura tells him, he's an old man, or I forget which scene it is, but she tells him, I will see you again in 25 years. And so that's kind of how the show actually kicked off. The very first episode kicks off with that scene. And then we move to present time. And so where it picks up, and by the way, Brad, I don't know what I expected, but there was nothing about the way the show started that I thought, oh, yeah, that's what I thought would happen. I mean, we know that there might be a bad Cooper, but so bad Dale Cooper is set free in the world. Good Dale Cooper is stuck in the Black Lodge. Which was also prophesied, right, in Fire Walk With Me, in the prequel movie that came out after the show. But that there's two Dale Coopers running around. And then a third, because it basically what happens is, it sounds like, and I don't know if you know this as concrete or not, what it seems like from the show is after 25 years, bad Dale has to go back into the Black Lodge. But he doesn't want to, because he's got a pretty cool life going in the real world. So he set up almost like a decoy Dale Cooper, who will get sucked into the lodge instead so he can keep running around in the world. So that guy goes in and good Dale Cooper comes out. Is that sort of how you would explain it?
Yeah. I mean, it feels like there's a rule and you've got this 25-year thing where good Dale can come out, the bad Dale got to go in, but it seems like this has all been thrown into chaos. And I kind of like how you've got some people like this in the sheriff's department and Twin Peaks kind of working their way to this story too. So it's really going to be interesting to see how it all ties together.
It does seem like it's really going to tie together. I feel like he is starting to converge these storylines. Do you think so? From the original series, there was Dr. Jacoby, who was the psychologist who was treating Laura Palmer. He was a real fruitcake type guy who was just way out there. And he's in the series, but now he doesn't have his doctor's license anymore. And he's kind of like a late night black helicopter government's out to get us guy, screaming these rants on basically on YouTube, it seems like. And he is selling these golden shovels that he paints himself so we can dig our way out of all the crap that the government gives us, it sounds like. So he's been on twice with these rants about the government. And I keep thinking, okay, is this just a weird Lynchian thing, or is this going to tie in? I'm starting to think he's going to tie into this in the end, too.
Yeah, I have no idea what Jacoby is doing. But like, the old shovel is going to go somewhere, and I have no idea. That's really something that keeps me puzzled.
Yeah, there's a lot that keeps you puzzled. Even if you just go into, if we just go into the imagination of the whole idea of the Black Lodge and the White Lodge, the scenes that we've seen with that, episode 8, which people will refer to forever now in Twin Peaks, is this whole, do you characterize it as a creation story, Brad?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's another thing that people can look at, and you're not going to have one opinion. And it's kind of like an episode in Lost that explains all of the backstory towards the end.
Yeah, it really is. And so that if you see no other episode, in fact, I had my son, Jack, who's 16, watch, just jump in on episode 8 and watch that. Because he had watched a little bit of Twin Peaks originally, but never got into it. So I just made him watch episode 8 with me. And he was just like, what the hell is this? I mean, that is an episode that if you're not all in, that takes you away. That makes you say, okay, I've tried, but this just isn't working for me. That really, I think, defines you as whether or not you're willing to go along with the artisticness of this and just live through. I mean, there's the length of the scenes and things like that in that episode are just mind numbing. But it's also just incredibly beautiful artistry as well. And I don't even know how to describe what exactly happens. And this kind of gives you the background on where the evil of Twin Peaks comes from and what hath we wrought type storyline. But the way that, tell them I'm on the radio. Who's trying to talk to you, Brad? Are you in a bar? Are they, come on, Brad, do a shot with Twin Peaks Fest.
I am at the Real Great Northern, and it's like, I've like dodged room to room because it's a party, you know?
That's awesome. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. You're in the Real Great Northern and people are partying it up.
Yeah, and so I can hear the waterfall, like, from where I'm standing. It's crazy.
What is the
and
Real
I can
Great
tell you, the party doesn't stop until the morning.
Does it really? Will they go all night there?
Oh, yeah,
What is the Real Great Northern called?
It's called the Salish Lodge and Spa.
And was that, so that's the exteriors of the Great Northern Hotel, or is that hotel?
Yeah, it looks exactly like it, but then it does look different on the inside. They don't have the tribal paintings and things like that. But, you know, it's funny. Some of the actors stay here during the festival, so, you know, if one of them comes in and out, I may put them on the phone.
That would be cool. That would be very cool. So you said Sherilyn Fenn is there. She has not appeared in the series yet, and she was promoted heavily. She was on the cover of Entertainment Weekly. We all knew she was going to be in, although IMDb identified her as only having one episode. Is everybody all over her? Yeah. Like, when is Audrey going to appear? And has she given anything away?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, it is like the CIA up here. The CIA. Someone asked the question, you know, too close to the bone. You know, the producer would look over and they would be like, yeah, we can't say anything.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when they did their pre-show press and like Kyle MacLachlan and Jim Belushi and Kimmy and I think Dana Ashbrook were on Good Morning America. And it was the weirdest segment because they literally couldn't answer a thing. And it sounds like only Kyle MacLachlan truly knows what happens in the show, that everybody else was kind of just given what they needed.
Yeah. They said tonight that Kyle, the only person on the cast that had read the script, and literally everybody else was just showing up to work and they had no idea how it fits into anything. So it's very interesting to hear some of the behind the scenes stories.
Yeah, I'll bet. Let me ask you, what is your most pleasant surprise so far? And first I'm going to tell you mine. I did not look forward to seeing Jim Belushi in this. I thought, you know, he's kind of a cheesy comedic actor, and I like him and his Chicagoan and all, but Jim Belushi, I have loved the storyline with Jim Belushi in this. I think he's been really, really good. I'm stunned and surprised and so happy about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the most pleasant surprise is Evil Cooper. I mean, Kyle MacLachlan's been able to make this entirely new character that's really driving this story. So, I mean, I just never would have expected that kind of performance from Kyle like that. I mean, obviously he's the master of Dale Cooper, but he also is the master of the other side, which I think is just such a testament to his talent and ability.
He's playing three different characters in this movie series, and regular Dale, he's barely been in at all, but Evil Cooper and this guy, Dougie Jones, which is now Dale Cooper, But as Dale came back into the real world, and we don't exactly know what the story is, but he is not himself. Either because of how he reentered the world, his brain has been fried and it's sort of like an amnesic state, or maybe because, I wonder, Brad, and I wonder what your theory is on this, is Dale Cooper not himself because of what he went through to come back into the world, or because evil Dale Cooper is still in the world and they can't both truly exist at the same time?
That's a loaded question. I think it's right now we're waiting for his mind to catch up and process.
We're losing yourself for a second. But so it sounds like you'd say you think more of an amnesic state, like it's slowly all going to come back to him.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. We're working our way back.
All right. Hold on 1 second. We got to take a quick break. If you have a cast member there, we'd love to talk to them as they're partying up at the Great Northern in the Pacific Northwest. Brad Dukes is on the phone with us. He's the author of Twin Peaks and Oral History, which you can download or buy online. 312-981-7200 is the number. If you have a Twin Peaks question for Brad after the news, or if you're a big fan of the show and want to make a comment, we'd love to hear from you as well. Let's take a quick break, catch up on headlines, and then more with Brad Dukes from the Twin Peaks Festival next, 720 WGN.
When the twilight is gone, and no songbirds are singing, when the twilight is gone, you come into my heart, and here in my heart you will stay. While I pray.
Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN, speaking with our friend Brad Dukes. He's up at the Twin Peaks Festival in Washington. We'll just do a few more minutes with Brad. He's having trouble getting away from the party, I think, up there, and having trouble keeping the signal. Brad, a couple of quick questions I still want to ask you about what's happened in the show and what's going on with all the characters, things like that. So,
sure.
Cherry Pie finally made an appearance last week on the show. What goes on at the festival with Cherry Pie? Is there a Cherry Pie eating contest?
Well, there's a cherry stem tying contest where, you know, the person who can, you know, tie a cherry stem the fastest wins a big prize. So that's always a fun contest to watch.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be. I imagine it would be. I was just thinking of this during the break. So before Twin Peaks came back, when it was first announced, so it's an 18-part series, but David Lynch says he thought of it more as an 18-hour movie. And when it first was announced, I can't remember the exact number, it was only going to be 9 or 12 hours. Do you remember what it was originally announced as?
It was 9, yeah.
It was 9. So it was only going to be 9 hours. And so we're already 11 hours in. And it's not like they could have condensed this all very easily into just 9 hours, I don't think. And I wonder, and you remember, so it was announced as 9, and then there was some drama that there were some disagreements between Showtime and David Lynch, and it sounded at the time like it was about money, but when it all got worked out, it became 18 hours. And I don't know if that was a Showtime thing, but in my head, I'm thinking David Lynch and Mark Frost come up with this story and say, "There ain't no way in hell we can tell this in 9 hours." And so they either had to have a fight with Showtime or do something to get them to go, okay, 18 hours. Do you know what went down with all that and how it went from 9 to 18?
I really don't. That is a huge mystery that I would love to find out one day. But I think, like all things in Hollywood, it's money, and they needed more of it, and I think the only way they were going to get it is if they produced more hours. So I don't know. Everything has been so tight-lipped about Twin Peaks that something like that feels like it's, you know, a mystery that might need some time to unravel.
Yeah, till it's all over with, and then people look back and reveal a little bit more.
Exactly.
And as far as the ratings, I know that there were stories early on that the ratings aren't good, but then there were stories that started coming out that while the original live viewings on Showtime aren't huge numbers, when they count all the streams and the repeat views and everything else, the number turned out to not be so bad. Has Showtime commented at all as the series has run about how happy or not they are with what they've seen so far and how the numbers have been?
I have only just seen them spin it. I think they enjoy that they're part of the conversation. I think they knew that letting David Lynch make an 18-hour movie isn't the most commercial move you can make. Mm-hmm. So I think this was a creative risk, and I think Showtime really needs something like a Game of Thrones or a game changer to, you know, really hang with HBO. So
yeah.
I think this was, you know, a strategized move to do that.
And was there ever an announcement, or do you have any idea what the budget was for this? Because it does not seem to be shot on a shoestring. That is for sure.
Oh, gosh. I have no idea. I haven't even heard a rumored number, so I definitely couldn't even say.
What about people? You know, there were 400 people, some listed on the IMDb site. That was the big story that came out about it, the huge cast that's in this. We still haven't seen Eddie Vedder yet. We saw Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails just in a musical scene. What do you make? And let me ask you that, because almost every episode has ended at the Roadhouse, which was the bar in Twin Peaks, with a band playing. At least out of the 11, probably 8 of them have ended with a musical interlude, right? And
yeah. And
I keep thinking, wow, is this just his way of ending the episodes, or is this all going to tie in? I'm starting to think there is going to be some big tie-in for the Roadhouse at the end, that it's going to make sense that we kept watching whole songs play more than just, oh, that helps tell the story, this song relates to the story. What do you think is going to happen with that? Do you think that's going to relate at all?
I think the last, it would be cool for the last music performance to be Julie Cruz. And I mean, she was the original Roadhouse singer, so I think we're kind of leading up to that, but I really like these, you know, the cinematic closing to each part where a band is playing and we see the credits and you feel like you've just watched a movie. I love how that works. But I mean, as we get closer to the end, it just gets more and more unpredictable.
Yeah. Michael Ontkean is not in the series. His brother, the other sheriff, Frank Truman, is now running Twin Peaks. He has spoken to Harry by phone. We haven't heard Harry's voice, but we know that Harry is sick. And it's believed that he will not be in the series at all. Heather Graham has not appeared in the series at all, though her character has also been referenced. Do you think we're going to, of any of the people that are rumored to not be in it at all, do you think we'll get an appearance by anybody?
Oh, gosh, let me think. I mean, the big question mark would be David Bowie, because they were filming this for probably 3 or 4 months before he passed away, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be the shock of the century. So who knows? I would love to see Bowie, and hopefully I want to see Killer Bob. That was my favorite character. So I hope they find a way to, you know, bring that character back to life.
Frank Silva, the gentleman who played Bob. Well, he has appeared in the episode with old footage several times now. And even sort of in Dale Cooper's face, although I didn't think they did as good of a job with that as they could have. I was a little disappointed at the one time Dale Cooper looked in the mirror and his face transformed a little bit. And he said, good, you're still with me. I wanted him to do a little more. But, you know, it's funny because we just saw with the Star Wars movie that was out earlier this year, Grand Moff Tarkin was in most of the movie completely CGI. So they certainly have the technology now to do that. I don't know if the cost is prohibitive to do it for something that's on Showtime versus a major Star Wars movie, but they certainly could do something like that if they truly wanted to.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think we're in for more and more surprises. I mean, I think it's going to be crazy, and I can't wait.
Brad Dukes is the author of Twin Peaks and Oral History. You can order it on Amazon or anywhere online that people sell books, right, Brad?
That's right.
And where should people go to visit your podcast or other writings?
They can find me on the Brad Dukes Show and on iTunes and SoundCloud. And I've been reviewing episodes each week in depth. So I hope you'll check it out.
That sounds good. Have fun up there. Stay out of trouble. Is there trouble to get into? Is it a crowd that will truly stay out all night drinking and partying and like just reveling in it?
Yeah. And trading theories. I mean, it won't stop. It probably won't stop until Monday.
Awesome. Well, Brad, we will check in again. Maybe right before the final episode, we'll have you back on and chat a little bit more, okay?
I would love to do that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for jumping on the phone. Have a good time. Stay out of trouble. Brad Dukes, Twin Peaks and Oral History from the Twin Peaks Festival up in the Pacific Northwest. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. So the story by Raquel Rutledge in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week and some follow-up on it about resorts in Mexico, it said Megan Gordon and her boyfriend Paul Jordan were at the swim-up bar in Iberostar's Paraíso del Mar. The two New Jersey residents were vacationing in Mexico in January when both blacked out after shots of tequila. 4 days earlier, 20-year-old Abby Connor of Pewaukee was found listless and face down in the same pool after having several drinks with her brother, who also blacked out. 4 days before Abby Connor was found floating face down in a pool at a Mexican resort, Mary Jo Kuhn waded over to a swim-up bar in the same complex. On her second drink, she blacked out. 4 days after Connor was pulled from the water, Megan Gordon and her boyfriend were sitting on stools at the same swim-up bar where Connor and her brother had been drinking tequila on a family vacation. Throughout the afternoon, a friendly bartender served Gordon and her boyfriend a couple of mixed drinks, then two rounds of tequila shots. Neither can remember what happened next, vomiting and being escorted away by hotel security. The two incidents are among more than three dozen that have surfaced in the wake of a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigation this month into the death of 20-year-old Abby Connor at the Iberostar Paraíso del Mar in Playa del Carmen in January. Kelly and I go down to the Playa del Carmen Cancun area every year. We have for the last 5 years. We bought into a vacation club, part of it too, which, separate story, we're killing ourselves over because then you got to pay all this money. But if you keep using it, it should be worth it, whatever. But we've gone to not the Iberostar, although I know 1 year when we were down there, Cap was at Iberostar. So I know people that have gone there. It's a very nice, huge resort. And I have other friends who have gone there. And we go to the Secrets Resorts down there. And we've never had a problem. But I'm not, I don't know whether to say I'm surprised by this or not. It's terrible. And are they being served tainted alcohol? Are they being served? Here's the thing that I noticed when I first went to Mexico, because we're going to an all-inclusive. So I'm thinking, okay, they want to save money. These drinks are going to be watered down. They're going to be listless. It makes sense, right? They're serving drinks all day that are for free, more or less. You paid for it, but, you know, you're getting a great deal. So they're not going to put much alcohol in them. I have found while we're in Mexico, the drinks seem pretty strong. And my theory on that has always been, they don't want you drinking the entire day long, so they'll make the drinks a little stronger. You'll slow down or stop drinking or, you know, go to pass out, go to sleep, whatever. Not blackout, hit your head. But if on the second drink they're passing out, that's odd to me. And so that does tend to say something is going on, whether it's bad alcohol, whether they're being drugged, I don't know. But there are a lot of stories that came out of this story. There were a lot of stories in the original story. And as this is the follow-up story, a lot more stories that have come out. And I don't think it's just, you know, oh, it's bad water. It's this. In some cases, it probably is people overdrank. People don't realize how much they drank. I mean, here's what happens. You land in Cancun. You walk out to go catch the bus wherever you're going. There's a bar right there. And you start drinking. And then if you're in a shuttle van or whatever, they've got beer in there. And then when you check into the hotel, they're giving you champagne. We have often arrived at the resort and needed a nap. Because we're already like, oh, man, we're tired. You just got up way too early. You flew. You drank on the plane. You drank at the airport. You drank in the car. You drink as you check in. For those of us who don't do this professionally, it's a lot of drinking all of a sudden. And you're tired by the time you get there. So then if you go to the pool and have a couple of shots of tequila, I'm not that surprised that that happens. Now, these people say, no, this was just our second drink. So maybe that is the case. Maybe there are some issues here. The president of Mexico's Health Commission, Senator Salvador López Brito, said in an interview that the legislature is working on an initiative to improve the controls and inspections for tainted alcohol at resorts. I mean, the truth is, the Mexican government and these resorts and people like Apple Vacations do not want this happening at all because they really need and want Americans to head down there and support the tourism industry. It's a huge industry, and without Americans coming down there, it will suffer greatly. I think Europeans and Canadians cannot make up for all the Americans that go down there by any means. So if this is happening intentionally, they want to take care of it. Whether or not it's tainted alcohol, I guess that's a possibility that resorts are trying to save money and they're buying alcohol on the cheap because they use so much of it. Although these are nice resorts. This is not some Iberostar is not just some seaside shack. I mean, it's a resort that you spend some serious money to go to. Apple Vacations has said it will push for hotels and resorts to install cameras in key public areas, such as swimming pools and bars. Travelers, including Connor's parents, told the Journal Sentinel the resorts claim they have no surveillance cameras and thus no video evidence of accidents or crimes that take place on their property. The other interesting story on some of these that came out of this is people that get sick and then are asking the resort to call an ambulance or call the hospital, and they've been given a tough time about that. Like, if you need to go to the hospital, you have to get in a cab, and then the hospital is demanding outrageous amounts of cash. So that's really weird and interesting. What could make two people black out at the same time, as many couples reported, somehow wind up back in their hotel rooms and wake up hours later with no memory of what happened? Matthew Johnson, an associate professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, has no direct evidence, but the stories point to several likely possibilities. PCP or Quaaludes. Based on the many accounts vacationers described, any of those drugs seem to make sense, said Johnson, a specialist in behavioral pharmacology. They all can cause people to be awake but not know or remember what they're doing. When mixed with alcohol, the effects are exacerbated and can cause all kinds of physical and psychological reactions. So maybe some of that is going on. It is unknown. 312-981-7200. I've traveled to Mexico many years. I've never seen anything like this. I've seen people drink way, way too much. At the resorts I've gone to, I've never seen anything like this. It doesn't mean it's not happening, but it is scary. And it's something that worries you as you plan a vacation down there. Several people interviewed by the Journal Sentinel say they recall being terrified. They couldn't say exactly why. When people say it's the zombie drug, that's not an exaggeration, Johnson said. It's not a drug of abuse. People don't like to get high on it. He's talking about a drug called scopolamine, also called devil's breath, that has been widely used in crimes in Colombia, where it is derived from the barraquero tree. In powder form added to a drink, it can lead to hallucinations, frightening images, and loss of free will, and it's known to cause amnesia. Low doses of scopolamine also come in patches that are prescribed by doctors to help with motion sickness. One couple from North Carolina interviewed by the Journal Sentinel said they were wearing the patches in March while on a snorkeling excursion in Cozumel. Like others, they had a few drinks. The last thing they remember is vomiting. Neither has any idea how they made it back to their cruise ship cabin. They woke up hours later and felt lucky to be alive. One had a large bruise on her thigh. Both her knees were scraped and bloody. PCP came to mind when Johnson learned some of the people also reported that they had gone into a rage. Also known as angel dust, PCP causes hallucinations, slurred speech, staggering, and other symptoms that resemble intoxication. Meg Ward, a 25-year-old from Milwaukee, was taken to the hospital after she and a friend were drinking shots at the Grand Oasis Tulum in June. Meg Ward was taken to a hospital. I'm a 25-year-old girl from Milwaukee, she said. I know how to drink, and I know my limits. I'm a 25-year-old girl from Milwaukee. I know how to drink, please. Once at the hospital, Ward started punching her friends, swearing at the doctors, and ripping the IV from her arm. I remember thinking, I need to escape. She raced out of the hospital and almost ran in front of an oncoming car. Quaaludes are another possibility because mostly they're still widely used in developing countries. Taking the stories collectively, Johnson said, it sounds pretty convincing that people are being spiked with something purposefully. In the case of Abby and Austin Counter, a drug test at a hospital in Mexico for common date rape drugs came up negative, though not all popular ones were included. Documents provided to the family by the hospital do not show that screens were done for PCP, Quaaludes, or scopolamine. Additional stories from other travelers cast doubt on the thoroughness and accuracy of tests done at the local hospitals. By the way, those two only had a 0.2 alcohol level. They were by no means impaired to the level that would make sense for them to pass out, black out, and do all those things. The Mexican government has long acknowledged that the nation has a problem with adulterated alcohol. A 2017 report by Euromonitor International found 36% of the alcohol consumed in the country is illegal, meaning it is sold or produced under unregulated circumstances and is potentially dangerous. The study, done in collaboration with the nation's Tax Administration Service, found that was an improvement from 2 years earlier when 43% was illegal. The National Health Authority in Mexico has seized more than 1.4 million gallons of adulterated alcohol since 2010, not just from small local establishments, but from hotels and other entertainment areas. We are concerned as an industry, said Geraldo Encierra, director of the Commission for the wine and spirits industry. Tackling illicit alcohol trade in Mexico is one of our most important tasks. The market for counterfeit alcohol in Mexico is driven in part by steep taxes on spirits, more than 53% in excise tax alone, and in the case of tequila, the expense of producing it. Like restrictions placed on labeling sparkling wine champagne, for liquor to be called tequila, it must come from one strain of the agave plant. Blue agave can be produced in the Mexican state of Jalisco. A bottle of real tequila typically costs about 500 pesos or $28 or more. A longtime liquor store owner in Mexico, who did not want his name published, told the Journal Sentinel that he is aware of counterfeiters who use industrial-grade alcohol, such as paint thinner, in place of ethanol, and they mix it with tequila-flavored powder. Well, that's a frightening thought. The fakes are also known to have methanol. He said methanol is highly toxic, volatile liquid that smells like ethanol, but can be deadly when ingested. So there's a lot going on down there, and they're looking into it. The State Department has issued a statement, so this Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article, at least, has certainly raised awareness of some of the questions about what is going on down there. Either way, for all of us, and I don't know if what's going on with the alcohol, hopefully they'll look into that and figure that out. But anybody traveling to a foreign country, A, be careful. B, when you're going to an all-inclusive resort, slow yourself down. Now, maybe that's not what happened with these guys, but I know that a lot of us, we go down, we get on the plane, we get in the bus ride. All of these things add up, and it's very easy. And I have lots of friends that they tell stories, not about blacking out, but about just drinking too heavily. It's like it's amateur night. We get away on vacation. We got to let everything out at once, and we don't slow down and take our time to enjoy the vacation a little more. And that leads to a couple of rough days on vacation when you only have a few to spend. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. 312-981-7200 is the number. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the historic Tribune Tower. Although not for long, Roger. They announced officially this week we got our move-in slips, right? We're going south of Michigan Avenue, right?
Yep. Yeah.
To
Illinois Center.
Illinois Center, yep, which is a big, nice complex.
Actually, it's like 2-3 buildings over there, lots underground.
WFLD's over there,
yeah,
right?
Channel 32, yeah.
I interned there.
Ooh.
In that building for Bruce Wolf. Over 20 years ago. 25 years ago.
He's an old dude, ain't he?
Well, now he is, because I'm an old dude, and Bruce is older than me.
And I'll tell you the connection, small world.
Yeah.
So I'm quite a number of years ago. I can't remember. That's how long it's been. Mm-hmm. But he was working in TV, so it had to have been over there. I was at the shopping center on Toohey Avenue, Village Crossing. And there was a store there. They resold old exercise equipment.
Okay.
And I just happened to walk into the store wanting to get a treadmill. I was thinking of it. And he was in there with a crew interviewing people about exercising, I guess. And he interviewed me. I was on the news.
And you were all excited.
Thing. I wasn't excited at all.
Oh, you were excited.
I was upset because I was kind of in grungy clothes and flip-flops. You know, I wasn't exactly, you know, looking my best. So, but yeah, we did a nice interview. While I'm walking on the treadmill, I'm explaining to him, you know, how much I'm trying to exercise, get back in shape,
you were
blah, blah, blah.
Testing it out, huh?
Yeah, testing out the equipment.
Was it like January 1st or something? Why was he doing that story?
No, this was during the summer, I think, yeah. I think I was wearing shorts at the time. Yeah, it had to have been warm weather.
Hmm. Well.
Yeah, so small world.
During the news, because we played the Ishnala commercial recently.
Yes.
I'm looking at their website at ishnala.com.
Yeah.
It doesn't say what time they close.
Why'd you keep saying they close at 10? Well,
because people called and told us that.
Oh.
That they close at 10, but it just says Monday through Friday. The bar opens at 4 p.m. And now somebody called Jess and said Ishnala's closed on Mondays, but I don't know if that's true. Because on their website, it says bar and dinner Monday through Friday starts at 4 p.m. Bar on Saturday and Sunday opens at 2 p.m. Dinner Saturday and Sunday starts at 3:30 p.m.
Mm.
So I don't know. Maybe they do close at 10, but maybe, you know, maybe we show up.
Well, they don't
want to
say what time they close, because what if you walk in at like 9?
Keep the party going, right?
Yeah. They'll serve you.
It's the actual location. So it's on this Mirror Lake, as we hear in the commercials.
Yeah.
But it's, what was it? I just saw the story.
How far away is it from the Dells then?
Oh, only a few minutes. Located just minutes from Wisconsin Dells, the Chenal Supper Club is nestled in the middle of beautiful Mirror Lake State Park.
A state park.
So listen to this, though, how old this is. In the language of the Winnebago Indian, Ishnala means by itself alone. The name is symbolized by the point of rock extending in the peaceful water. Pioneer settlers purchased Ishnala from the Winnebago tribe in 1826.
Wow.
And constructed a log cabin trading post. In 1909, the Coleman family purchased the cabin and built their dream home. The original stone fireplace, log walls, and staircase still remain as part of the restaurant's architecture.
No way.
In 1953, the Hoffman brothers purchased the land and built Ishnala as it is today.
That is cool.
So it's been around for quite a while.
Yeah.
And it looks like just an old... It looks like, it looks to me, the pictures on the website make me think of Dirty Dancing a little bit, and kind of just a resort.
That kind of resort
in the
place.
Woods.
Yeah.
Really cool, old architecture, a lot of wood.
Yeah. Super.
Cool. So cool. We got to get up there, Raj.
Yeah, we got to. Let's do a family thing.
I'm not taking the kids.
Wait, what? Just you and me?
Jess can come. She'll be our designated driver.
All right.
She'll be
having
the Brandy Alexanders. All right. We're bringing wives? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we got to get the show to go so we can kind of write it off.
Exactly. You Let's. I'm sure there's a Allstate agent in the area.
We do a little hometown voices.
Why not?
From Ishnala?
Yes.
I'm up for that.
You and I could easily do it.
We could.
I've never done one.
I've produced them. I've never, back in my producing days.
Yeah.
But I've never hosted one.
What? Easy.
Generally at 2:30 in the morning, it's, you know, they're not selling those things out. But although we could do a great local one here in Chicago, I'm sure. Taco Burrito King. We do our show from a Taco Burrito King.
Well, you like tacos.
You don't like tacos?
Well, I do, but I don't put everything on it.
Well, that's okay. We won't make you. It's not like ketchup on a hot dog. There aren't hard and fast rules with the tacos. By the way, did you see that Heinz is trying to get around the Chicago ketchup rules by coming out with hot dog sauce? Which is ketchup?
I did. Yes.
Yes, Jess, that is the thing.
It's a good looking bottle, too.
Now, Jess, that the rule is, turn your mic on. You know the rule is that you cannot put ketchup on a hot dog in Chicago, right? You've heard this before?
It's an unwritten rule, but it's a rule.
It might be written, quite honestly.
Well, it's been written in books by people who have made up the rule.
It's a famous rule.
Well, all right.
So the Heinz Ketchup just last week announced they have Chicago hot dog sauce.
Yeah.
So you can put something on your hot dog and not call it ketchup and get away with it.
Yeah.
If you're 10 or under, you're allowed to put ketchup on a hot dog, I would say. It's as adults we get on people about it.
Yeah. Kids are okay. They can do whatever.
It does seem like a silly rule.
It does. You can put whatever you want on a hot dog. Some people, when you know what? I've worked at, I think I told you this last week. I worked at the Dairy Queen. Someone else I told. We were talking about chili dogs last weekend. And I worked at the Dairy Queen on Howard Street, and chili dogs were really big there.
Hmm.
And people would order regular hot dogs, but some would say no pickles, some would say pickle, no tomatoes, tomatoes. No peppers, peppers. So it's whatever you want on it, you know. I'm not trying to be blasphemous here. I was born and raised in Chicago. You know, I think I had a hot dog the first day I got home from the hospital. So you know, I'm all good about Chicago style hot dogs. I just don't think anyone should be chastised for wanting to put what they want on it.
Okay. You know what one of my favorite toppings on a hot dog is? You're not going to like it.
Oh, go ahead.
Sauerkraut.
I've made those before.
You have?
Yeah.
I
haven't
like
eaten them, but I've made them.
You make them for other people?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice of you. Sauerkraut on a hot dog or on especially a brat.
Yeah.
Is very good.
Uh-oh, now I got the anti-hot dog people, ketchup on hot dog people calling.
They're calling the newsroom?
Yeah, they're calling. Someone's calling the newsroom. I'm on the air. Sorry if you're listening and you're calling. I'm sorry. I'm calling to yell at me
about ketchup. Okay.
Oh, gosh.
So, am I going to answer that real quick?
Yeah, I'll answer
that. Go ahead. Right. Live on the air.
720 WGN Radio News. Can I help you? Hold on a second. It's Steve Alexander.
What? Is he at Ishnala right now?
Is he what?
At Ishnala?
Yeah, they want Matt wants to know if you're in Ishnala at the supper club.
All right, we'll let Roger take the call from Steve Alexander, which I'm guessing is about ketchup. Is it about ketchup? Is he calling about ketchup?
Okay, where at?
Okay, maybe he's got a
division. Okay.
Oh, he's got a report on news. 312-981-7200 is the number. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN.
Yeah.
Turn Roger off for a second because we're just hearing him say, yeah, probably. I'll turn you back on in a second, Roger. I'll let you finish that. So Anthony Scaramucci, it was last Friday, so we knew that Spicy had resigned when we were last on the air last Friday. Is everything okay, Raj?
No, it's you know, we told you in the news about the waves and the rip currents, and Steve was just calling that two ambulances just left Lakefront at Division, so we're waiting to get more information from the police department as to what happened. It's possible, because this happened, I think, last weekend or the weekend before, that somebody got pulled into the lake. They fell into the lake, again, overnight. And so we're waiting words. But Steve was just calling because he apparently was just waking up and saw the ambulances, or the ambulances woke him up, or he's just getting home and saw the ambulance.
You know, riptide currents or not, 4, 3, 2 in the morning, don't be near the lake.
Well, it's nice out.
It's nice and out, there's a but lakefront, it's very dangerous. That's fine. Go jogging dangerous. And stuff. But I'm sorry, if you're falling in the lake, I'm a little skeptical on your cognitive abilities at the time.
Exactly.
My guess is you're impaired.
And
if you're out drinking, I know it's a nice night out, but sit far away from the lake. Don't go walking near the lake.
Because at that area, along Division there, that area, there's not a lot of room to go along the lakefront because of the drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's with 8-foot high waves, you're going to get sucked in. You're walking along, la-di-da, and the waves are going to hit you, and you're going to get pulled in. So, again, not a smart thing, no matter what your sobriety might be.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, as we've said for 3 years now on the show, Raj, if you're out after 3 a.m., you're bound to start making some bad decisions.
Yeah.
By 3 a.m., you have to either have figured it out or decided to call it a night.
Unless you're an idiot like me in the middle of winter driving on Lakeshore Drive.
But you're only doing that because you're headed to or from work, right? You're not just out joyriding at 3 a.m.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You were headed home from work.
But I had lots of warnings, just like these people had lots of warnings.
I know, but still.
Yeah.
Most people that we see walking up and down Michigan Avenue right now are not headed to or from work.
True.
Actually, in another half hour, they might be, or they might be out jogging. But general, that 3 to 4 a.m. hour, it's people about to make some poor decisions.
Yeah.
So.
Well, bars close at 4. Right?
A lot of them at 2. There are some 4 a.m. bars.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So we're talking
Last Friday, when we were here Saturday morning, we knew that Sean Spicer had resigned.
Mm-hmm.
He was all upset that President Trump was hiring Anthony Scaramucci to be the White House communications director.
Right.
And then in the past week, Scaramucci has had his first... his first press conference. Well, actually, we played that last week, too, right?
Yeah,
that
he was had a press week. Conference his, that first day.
His famous 27 seconds talking about what a winner President Trump is, how he's seen him throw a tight spiral through a tire and swish baskets from the key at Madison Square Garden with an overcoat on and nail 3-foot putts. And we laughed about how that part was kind of maybe not the best but sell. Then,
did you see they issued the transcript afterwards?
Did they change it from 3 foot?
30 feet.
Get out!
I swear to God.
Are you serious?
Honest to goodness.
When they released the White House transcript, they changed what he said to 30-foot putts?
Yes. I saw that a couple of days later, and I go, oh, I got to tell Matt.
God, I told you that President Trump was in there going, hey, I loved it, except 3 foot. What's that? I can nail 3 foot
right,
in my sleep.
Nothing.
30 foot. I nail 30 footers. That's what you've seen. Oh, my God. That is beautiful. God, what a time to be in a political science class or something.
Oh, this is, it's golden. To steal a phrase from another politician. Golden.
So Anthony Scaramucci, who calls himself the Mooch, is the new White House communications director. Something that's been rumored for quite a while, but had not taken place yet until now.
Well, he had been trying to get on staff since January, apparently, before January, since the election.
Ever since the election. Now, how much did he, do you know how involved was he with the campaign at all? Because he previously... Because we were also laughing last week that he had not deleted his tweets before he got the job and was now seemed like feverishly deleting any tweet that was pro-Hillary or anti-Donald Trump. And there were a good amount of them, it sounded like. How involved was he in the campaign, or was he not involved in the campaign at all?
I from my experience, I don't remember hearing his name. And if I did hear his name, it was either very infrequently or in a minor capacity. The first I remember of him was when this happened this past week.
Now, he was the subject of the story that got the three CNN people fired, right? I had read that last week. Remember about
three weeks ago, there
was a story about somebody related to Trump and Russian ties. And it was, I believe it was Scaramucci. And the story had to be retracted by CNN and three people resigned because of it. I really wonder now, because of everything that's come out about Reince Priebus and Spicer not wanting him to be part of the administration.
Right. They fought it a long time.
And we know there's these terrible leaks coming out of the West Wing. Did they leak some story or try to leak some story to CNN that CNN went with because they were getting it from the higher ups because they wanted to prevent Scaramucci from getting a foothold? And then it backfired on the CNN reporters.
It's anything's possible.
I really do wonder now. Yeah.
In politics, anything's possible. Everything's fair.
In right now, the world of politics.
Yeah.
For sure. More than ever before, right?
Yeah. Way more than ever before. You know, the president said he wanted to clear the swamp. And he wanted to do things differently. And he has been true to his world. Nothing is done the way it used to be done. And I think it is a harder thing for all the other politicians to deal with than it is for the president to deal with.
Well,
the only thing he's having trouble dealing with is not getting things done when he says they should be done.
I think it's been a struggle for him, too. I mean, I know he's it does seem that it's just I don't know what to think. Is President Trump figuring out how to play this game and sort of coming to grips with it? Or is he pushing back even harder and saying, I'm going to do it my way, whether it works or not, this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah, I think he's pushing back harder because he still wants to do it his way. And that's exactly what he said and did during the campaign. So he's not changed. I mean, he's exactly the person who got elected and who ran for office. Nothing has changed with him.
I wish so bad we could hear the interview or conversation that Anthony Scaramucci had with President Trump to convince President Trump, I'm the guy for the job. Because, you know, we know that he wanted Spicer to be an attack dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
Made Spicer go out inauguration night and just tear into the press about how he was misrepresented, how big the crowd was and all that stuff.
And it didn't fit well with Spicer. He didn't handle that well. That was not him.
Scaramucci could have given that speech.
Oh,
and
easy.
Apparently he will. But it just wasn't Spicer's thing. And it was an ill-fitting suit on Spicer the entire time. And so he resigns because he doesn't want the Mooch. And then Mooch has his first press conference, goes on and on about President Trump. And then this week, he calls it. So Ryan Lizza at the New Yorker has a story about how the Mooch and this guy Bill Shine, and I think somebody else had dinner with President Trump. And Scaramucci's really ticked off that he had that story because, for whatever reason, he didn't want people to know, or somebody leaked that.
Again,
in.
Maybe the big thing was leaks.
Maybe he didn't care that people knew, but he cared that somebody leaked him that story.
Right.
And why the hell are they doing that? So he calls up Ryan Lizza, a reporter for The New Yorker who had written a story, and doesn't say, hey, I want to talk to you off the record. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say, hey, I want to do some stuff just on background. And he's the White House communications director.
Right.
So you can't give him, I mean, you can if you want.
But that's not been his job.
It's not been his job, but it's now his job.
Right.
So when people go, well, he's like, you know, with the president taking these meetings, or Donald Trump Jr., I don't know that you get to keep giving people a, hey, he's new at this.
Right.
If your title is White House Communications Director.
Wi-Fi becomes
yellow. If your title is White House Communications Director, you need to know how you work with the press. That you need to clear
right.
off the record if you're hoping that it's off the record.
Right.
But he calls up and starts badgering Ryan Lizza to tell him who gave you this information. He wants to know the source because, you know, he's all upset that I asked these people to give me some time and not leak, and here we are, and right away, so who's your source? And he says, well, of course I'm not going to tell you that. And he says, then I'll just fire everybody and you won't be protecting anyone. And the guy's like,
right.
okay. Well, yeah. That doesn't mean I'm going to give you the source. And then he goes on and on, ripping apart people in the West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the Mooch knew Ryan Lizza a little bit beforehand. Whether or not you do, it seems odd to just start tearing into people. He told him, I'm not Steve Bannon. I'm not trying to suck my own blank.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to build my own brand off the effing strength of the president. He also tore into, what's his name?
Rince
Priebus.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. And it made clear he believes Priebus is the one leaking the information. It was just a crazy, crazy couple of days. And so then on Friday, Priebus, well, we didn't announce anything about Priebus. We announced a new, chief of staff. A new
right.
chief of staff was announced.
Right. The general.
And the belief is that he wants somebody to pressure Sessions to resign or to fire Sessions so that they can install somebody
mm-hmm.
who won't recuse themselves from the Russia investigation.
Right.
And then that way they can dismiss Mueller from that job.
From the investigation, right.
Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is, every time something else happens, two things happen. One is there is some ridiculous correlation that fits from this and Watergate. Because Nixon did this basically the same thing,
yeah,
right? Replaced the chief of staff
yeah.
with an army general or with a military general.
Mm-hmm.
And with the same idea to fire the special investigator.
Yeah. And
so, this very weird correlation. And then the other thing is, every time Trump does anything, somebody has a tweet that he sent out 6 years ago about Obama that somehow now backfires on him.
Exactly.
So there was a tweet today about 3 years and three White House chiefs of staff. No wonder Obama can't get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is 6 months in, and he's on number two.
Yeah.
And who knows how long this gentleman will last.
Yeah.
I mean, the burnout rate in that West Wing has to be insane. The pressure they're under,
mm-hmm.
It's got to be fascinating as hell. But to be somebody there always on edge at how your boss is going to react, what your boss is going to say or do, which is going to make your job a little tougher.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to just, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall in there right now?
God. You know who seems to be continually unfazed by all this is Kellyanne Conway.
Well,
she just keeps popping up on Fox and CNN, doesn't she? Yeah, but when she goes, you don't hear anything about her.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, she's there. She's popping up, does her thing, does it very well, and then disappears again. But she's on staff. She's one of his spokespeople.
It's so interesting you wonder how it works with President Trump, because I imagine you're either in his really good graces or in the doghouse. And once you're in the doghouse, you got to figure out, how do I get back in his good graces?
Or you're out.
Yeah. Well, Kellyanne is stuck.
Yeah.
And she had some slip-ups. But she's been able to keep working her way back in.
It's an enlightening time. Is that an appropriate description? Enlightening time that we live in. I mean, I try to look at all sides. I really do. And like I kind of alluded to before, he's exactly who ran for office.
Oh, yeah.
He has not changed. And he is running this as he has his business. He is in charge. And it's not that he's learning on the job. This guy is not dumb. He would not be able to be doing what he's doing in the position that he's in if he was not smart. He has smarts. I think he understands completely the role of the Constitution, the role of the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the courts. He cannot be ignorant of all of that and be able to do what he does. But he doesn't like it, and he wants it to change per his desires each day.
It's very interesting. You're right. He has to have smarts, right, to have gotten as far as he's gotten. However, it doesn't appear that way a lot of times.
Well, it doesn't appear to us.
Or he knows everything he's doing.
Right.
And just provides these great distractions from the other stories. Hates the Russia story. That's all we hear about. Wants to fire Mueller. Wants this and that. So Scaramucci, God, what a great way to get the press to talk about something else. Now the press is talking about Scaramucci like crazy.
And the chief of staff.
Yeah. And Scaramucci's wife filed for divorce yesterday. Right.
And then the president goes on these campaign appearances.
Yes.
And now we've got the Boy Scouts. Now we've got the police department. Now we've got...
How about the police department one? That seems like an odd one.
But see, here's the deal that, as far as I see, and it goes back to the Boy Scouts too. Why invite somebody who you're not sure what they're going to say and then take 2-3 days to... And I'm using air quotes for all you people listening on the radio right now. 2-3 days to apologize. Now, the police department did it a lot faster than the Boy Scouts did.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's you don't not invite the president of the United States. That's a pretty good feather in their cap to have the president appear at their event. That
a lot
is
more
cool.
press than the Boy Scouts have gotten in a long time.
Oh, yeah. But still, to not... be aware that based on past experience that this might be something, a situation that you're going to have to come up with some excuses.
Yeah.
I just.
All right. We'll get into a little more of the mooch and what he said this week after we check the news. You're okay for news headlines right now, Roger?
I think I am. Right. Yeah.
It's 4:32 in the morning. Let's get upstairs and check the headlines. Matt Bubal here with you. 720 WGN, 4:38 in the morning, everybody. We've got O or Max coming up with the morning show here shortly. We're talking a little bit about Anthony Scaramucci, the new White House communications director, and the, as always, interesting week that was in D.C. Glenn's got a comment he wants to make this morning at 312-981-7200. Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Trying to stay awake, driving trucks here.
Stay awake, my friend.
You guys keep me awake.
Good.
Listening to you guys, it's just the analogy of, you know the story with the pregnant shark. The offspring in the womb, they will attack and kill each other, and only one comes out alive.
Seriously? Is that true?
Serious? Yes. And I don't know if all species do it, but that's what happens. And that's, I'm thinking that's what's happening with the Trump administration. They're all attacking each other, and... you know, fighting each other's heads off. I don't know.
I agree with you. It does seem like there is quite a bit of that. I think that President Trump was probably under some pressure to take some people from the RNC. So Rens Priebus was the head of the RNC. Spicer was the head press guy for the RNC. And I imagine there was some advice given to him like, hey, you've got to have some people in here who know what in the world you're facing, how this works from a standpoint of day to day, what's got to be done. You know, I know he ran on, I'm going to drain the swamp, but let's face it, you got to have some people in there with some working knowledge about how this works every day, right? So I'm sure he was under some pressure to take some people that maybe he didn't want to take, or maybe they had endeared themselves to him and he thought, oh, this will work. But, I keep trying to think of what's the right analogy for this drain the swamp thing. And it's like, you know, I don't know. Sometimes when you drain the swamp, I guess there's some backflow in your plumbing inside your own house because he's having trouble sort of draining and then redraining, or something's going on. I don't know how exactly to describe it, but it's not working out very peacefully.
Well, draining the swamps, you know, you find out what's been sitting in the silt for years that you really don't want to see, really. But I don't know. That's the only analogy. But his big problem is whether it's right or wrong, he needs to listen to people and take their advice instead of just spouting off whatever he wants to, you know, say. I don't know. It's becoming interesting.
My other thing is,
I'm just wondering how soon it is before CNN hires Spicer.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. Thank you so much for the call, Glenn. Safe driving. Keep your eyes open. I'll try to keep you awake at least for another 20 minutes here until Max and O start the morning show. But Spicer is now available. Rens Priebus is now available. And you got to think, I don't know if CNN hires either of them or if it's Fox. Because I don't know if they're going to go, you know, Spicer's only statements publicly since he resigned have been very supportive of President Trump. Now, as I understand, I think Roger told me last week, he's still on the payroll till like August 17th or something.
Yeah, at least through the end of this month.
So maybe at that point he signs a book deal. I think you got to go book if you're Sean. I would totally go book.
But
maybe he's not going to want to turn on the president. Maybe he's going to say, no, you know what? I'm going to be a good soldier and I'm not going to reveal, you know, what I could reveal. I don't know how it's going to go.
I think what you might see is what we saw when some of the top people left President Obama. They eventually became like independent for hire commentators on the various cable channels. And the books didn't come out till later.
But some of them
still haven't come out.
There wasn't the demand for the books, because while there was controversy surrounding President Obama, it was more at the time, certainly early on in office, it was the whole audacity of hope and that we had gotten a black man elected president and what we went through and all that stuff. This, there's been so much drama involved that there's going to be a high demand for a book. If Spicer said, I'll write a tell-all, somebody's going to throw a few million at him right now for that book.
You know, and
I don't think anybody out of Obama's office had that going on early on in the administration.
Yeah, but by the time it gets done and everything, it could be another year, year and a half, 2 years before it actually gets out.
No, we got to rush that out 6 months.
Well,
because so much other craziness. No, you can't.
No, I know.
So much other craziness is going to happen that it's a short shelf life. I mean, 6 months from now, we might be saying, oh, my God, that's right. Remember Spicer? That was the first guy.
Yeah.
We might not even remember who he was because Scaramucci is going to suck all the energy out of the sun. And there will be blackness.
No, it's not going to be.
If anybody could just suck the energy out of the sun,
yeah,
I think it's the Mooch. He announced that he wanted a fresh start with the media, pledged an era of new good feeling, and promised to create a positive mojo. This is Rolling Stone's recap of Anthony Scaramucci in the week that was. As he was doing this, the press was seizing on the fact that he was deleting old tweets that supported gun control, called climate science irrefutable, and described Trump as, quote, an odd guy, smart, with no judgment, which is pretty dead on. One tweet even committed ultimate Trump heresy by saying of Hillary Clinton, quote, she is incredibly competent. So he had to delete all those. While speaking, a fellow White House spokesperson and new department subordinate, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Mooch, delivered a line that read like a madman screen test. Sarah, if you're watching, I love the hair and makeup person that we had on Friday.
Wow.
Get in a sexist comment right away.
Yeah.
He got caught talking out of school in between TV segments. Quote, in the back of my mind, I have to call on CNN and send a message to Zucker that we are back in business. He added that Zucker wasn't getting a placement fee, but had, quote, helped me get the job by hitting those guys, referring to three CNN reporters who had to resign over a botched report claiming Scaramucci had inappropriate contact with Russians. He appeared to confirm a Washington Post report his boss had called fake news. Trump lawyer Jay Sokolow had told ABC that, quote, pardons are not being discussed and are not on the table. But Scaramucci told Fox News Sunday that, hell yes, he discussed pardons with the chief. Quote, I'm in the Oval Office with the president last week. We're talking about that. He brought that up. He said he doesn't have to be pardoned. There's nobody around him that has to be pardoned. He was just making the statement about the power of pardon. In the space of a week, Trump's new press expert demonstrated that A, he didn't know how to hold off the record conversations, B, didn't understand that cameras and microphones keep rolling even when the red light is off, and C, doesn't bother to check the other public statements made by administration officials before he makes statements of his own. Which is totally makes him fit in perfectly. I mean, this is what Trump loves. He doesn't want a guy that knows how to do this and that. He wants a guy that's going to go out there and just blow the doors off everything.
Right.
And that's what the Mooch is going to do.
Which is in keeping with part of the style of President Trump when he was in business, when he ran his businesses. I mean, there's been a lot of comments out by people who know him a lot better than you or I know him for a lot longer, who say that this is the type of management style that he has exhibited over the decades.
The Mooch has?
No. The Trump president. Yeah. And that that dissent and infighting amongst his top people is something that he enjoys.
There are two places I could see Donald Trump really thriving. Mm. One is the Thunderdome in the Mad Max movies. Two is a Roman gladiator pit.
Oh, yeah.
I just see Trump sitting there with that foil leaf crown in the white tunic. And wine and grapes and just the thumb up, thumb down, just all afternoon.
And everyone battling for his approval.
Let him fight to the death.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, as crazy as it sounded, that shark analogy kind of makes sense. They are all just piranhas in a tank eating each other over there.
Yeah, it's deflecting, too. And that's what bothers me. It deflects a lot away from more serious issues that have my concern. And, I go back to a wise elderly gentleman many, 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 many years ago who told me after I lamented about all the things that bothered me that I wanted to change. And he said, stop trying to control uncontrollable situations. And so while I may have a lot of concerns about a lot of what's happening in Washington, other than phone calls and my vote, right now, unless I ran for office, which God, I'm not going to do, there's not a lot I can control about what's happening there or what's happening around the world that Washington needs to be addressing.
Well, that's always true. There's not a lot you can do about anything going on in Washington, but people have the power to call their congressmen,
that's
to
true.
Organize. There's all that stuff that if you're really upset with how things are going on,
that's
don't
right.
just say, well, I can't do much about it.
Oh, no. I'm not saying not do anything about it. I'm just saying.
Get up and sign a petition, speak somewhere, do something. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot.
There's things you can do. But again, the power to affect change directly through legislation.
Well, that lies within the Congress.
Exactly.
But
now,
there are employees.
Yeah. Here's the main point. The public put them there.
The government is of the people, by the people, and for the people, not for a select few. And I think Americans need to be reminded of that time to time and stand up. And I know a lot have this health care issue has coalesced the country like nothing I've seen in a long time.
We got to take a quick break. We got Max or O coming up with the morning show in a little bit. A little more with you. 312-981-7200. Mapu Bala, 720 WGN. Boom. 312-981-7200. Mark is in Aurora this morning. Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
Yeah, good morning. Maybe some listeners will remember from the 70s, there were psychiatrists who put out books like I'm Okay, You're Okay, and Games People Play. Games People Play was by Eric Berne, and one of the games that he named was Let's You and Him Fight. And perhaps the crucial observation he made for the discussion you've got going is that those who get involved in a game always want a payoff. And then the other observation is that his definition of games presupposed that they're harmful. And nowadays we would say dysfunctional family, and then we would rationalize failing to do anything about it by saying, well, every family's dysfunctional, you know. Mm-hmm. And we might be in danger of doing that with politics. And the thing we can ask about the political scene is, what payoff does Trump get out of being an instigator? And also, what payoff do the fighters get out of being in the fight? And we can probably assume safely that Trump is good at picking out people who want to fight, and that the people who want to fight are good at getting Trump to instigate it.
Well, it's interesting. I think that what he wants more than anything, and it seems like it's come through in a few different things, the Comey thing and the way Sean Spicer has come and gone, he wants loyalty. He wants somebody who will fight for him no matter what. Even when he missteps, no matter what happens, he wants somebody who is going to fight to the death to protect the president and his ideals and his, what he wants to put forth. And he's felt with a few different people, I think, that he wasn't getting that. And so I don't know what the payoff exactly is, other than that he I think, values loyalty above all else. And I think it's more important right now to him, it seems like, to have somebody in these jobs who he knows has his back, who is going to fight not only for his agenda, but to protect him and what his legacy will be and things like that as he's feeling his way around. Let's face it, he's a political novice, and so he's feeling his way through this first 6 months, right? I think anybody would acknowledge that, except for maybe him. And so he is getting people in there that will fight to the death to protect him. And Scaramucci is the ultimate Luca Brasi when it comes to that. Here's a guy who's going to stand next to him and will tear you down and will praise him no end, it seems like. It's going to be very interesting few weeks ahead and 3.5 more years ahead for sure. Mark, thank you so much for the call. Matt Bubala with you. We're going to take one more quick break and then check in with O, see what's coming up on the morning show next.